Welcome to another Card Unload Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, we've had the Olympics and we're getting ready for the Paralympics.
We are. The Paralympics is just about to kick off and we've got our own, very own Paralympian sitting with us.
Well, would you like to introduce Malcolm?
Well, you just did. You said Malcolm.
So Malcolm Bennett.
Malcolm Bennett, welcome. This is, how many times have you been on our show now?
This would be my third or fourth one.
So you're like our, a regular.
Yeah.
A regular. And so we're going to wheel you out when the Paralympics are on.
At my age, I'll take it.
So, as Rob said, the Olympics are just finished. We always know the Paralympics follow. And typically, unfortunately, there hasn't been the same sort of media coverage, has there?
No, but I will say, to be fair, it has improved a lot over the last probably 10 years. But no, it's never the same as the Olympics.
I'm going to say, you reckon social media has been a great thing for other sports apart, like we think AFL is our big sport here, and of course the Olympics is on the world stage. We're going to have the best para athletes competing from all around the world, and social media seems to be now a great platform for promoting sports that don't often get main sort of media coverage.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I wish back in my day, if we'd had social media, I think my profile would have been bigger, so it would have led to other opportunities outside of the sport. So it's great for those athletes now that, you know, you see them, they get so much coverage now just from training camps and this and that, which unless somebody knew that we were away doing a competition or a training camp. So it's definitely come a long way.
And it's good timing nowadays. They didn't used to do this, but the way they run the Paralympics sort of almost in conjunction with every Olympics, and it's only a few weeks afterwards, you come off the euphoria that people feel about the Olympics, and you get a lot more notice about that as well, which is a good thing.
It's a great thing, and then that probably started back in Sydney. Back in Sydney, we got a half-an-hour highlight show on the ABC every night, and that was a huge thing. And then it grew from there. You know, I think Greece, we got a bit longer, and some of the events were actually shown live. And now, for what I can gather, Channel 7 are showing a lot of stuff live. So, you know, in the sake of, 20 years, that's a huge movement.
And in terms of that 20 years, now, from an athlete point of view, I mean, when I was competing many, many years ago, in my mind, I didn't see a difference between a para athlete and what was called an able-bodied athlete, because when you're out there training with other athletes, you see the hard work that people are putting in. But do you think from a societal point of view, like 20 years on since the Sydney Olympics, like there's been a big shift in how society sees people who have a disability? And do you think people now appreciate para athletes maybe more than they have in the past in terms of the hard work and the skill level that they have?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you can look at it two ways. I mean, from a lifestyle point of view, having a disability is much more accepted nowadays than it was, say, 20 to 30 years ago when I was growing up. And as far as the sports side of it, people really don't differentiate the two. Like, they just consider that whether you're an Olympian or a Paralympian, to them you're just an Olympian. And some people will see that as a negative. I see it as a positive because they just see us the same as what people would call the able-bodied athletes. We do the same amount of work. You know, we compete in basically the same events. Like the 100 metres is still the 100 metres. They don't make it shorter just because you have a disability. So I think it's a great thing that people just, for sake of better term, just lump us all in together because that's basically what we are.
Yeah,
exactly. We're just all athletes.
And that's the point I wanted to make. I think athletes feel that way, but it's great that the general public have caught up.
Well, you know, as a Paralympic, who were the inspiration for you both at the Olympics and the Paralympics? Obviously, you would have grown up sort of thinking about the Olympians, but what about the Paralympians as well? Who are your inspirations for both the able-bodied and the Paralympic?
Able-bodied, I was a big Michael Johnson fan, even though he was a 200-400 runner. I just loved the way he conducted himself, how he never had that big-headed attitude, even though he was, you know, the best of the best. So I was always a big fan of his, and I got to meet him at the Goodwill Games back in 2001, and he was such a nice person to talk to. As far as the Paralympics, it would have to be Neil Fuller. I mean, he was the guy that discovered me through literally a chance encounter, and he was my roommate early on. We trained together for about 18 months. So I also got to learn the ins and outs of do this, don't do this, you know, how important recovery is and all the rest of it. Because early on, I just thought you just run, but it doesn't work that way. You've got to give your body time to recover and this and that, and you've got to have some time away from the sport as well. So he was able to teach me all those intricacies about being an athlete.
It's interesting because in Gawler we've got quite a few sort of people that have competed at the Paralympics. I mean, you mentioned Neil Fuller who lost his leg after a soccer accident, and we had Paul Benz and yourself. Is it sort of like an advantage to have like a hub of Paralympians in a similar area?
I think it was, and I mean, it was great. I mean, the day I got my letter into 2000, I think it was, the postie came. He knew I was waiting for it, and I was his first stop for the day. But then he wouldn't leave until I opened it in front of him. So luckily it was good news. But, yeah, it's great. I mean, people know what you're doing. People are supportive. Having, you know, three people from a town for Paralympics in SA, that's pretty big.
Richard Bednall was your coach as well.
He was, yeah, for about 8 years.
So as we speak, the Paralympics is about to kick off. So take us back to, like, Sydney, for example, getting ready for the opening ceremony. What will the athletes be feeling like today leading up? I know our podcast will go out a bit later, but tell us what the athletes will be feeling and what they'll be going through.
Believe it or not, it's a very long day, and Sydney was even longer because as the host country, you come in last, but you have to get to the stadium the same time as everybody else. So it's literally a fight to get on the transport from the village to the stadium. And then, say, in Sydney, we sat outside for probably 5 hours, and you just make your own fun.
You know, it's funny, you said in Sydney, Australia came in last because they're the host country, but in all the other Olympics, don't they do it alphabetically and they go in first?
Generally, yeah. So in Greece, we were one of the first countries in, which was good in a way because we got to sit and watch a lot of the opening ceremony that we missed the time before.
I was going to ask you, how has been, like, so being a Paralympian, how has that changed? I mean, I know obviously when you first started your sport and so on, that would be a big change for you as a person. But like now that you've retired and you like that's something like me in the past, how has that changed your life? How do you reckon your life would have been different if you hadn't been, say, discovered by Neil Fuller?
Oh, if I hadn't have been discovered by him, I honestly don't think my life at that time probably wasn't going anywhere. Because back then people with disabilities were looked at completely different to as they are now. So I really didn't know where I was going in life and what I was going to do and didn't really have a purpose. And that chance meeting gave me a purpose, you know, and it gave me a goal to strive to. Like, I never thought that I'd get to travel overseas, you know, let alone compete for my country. So that was huge for me.
And now you're coaching.
I am.
And we spoke to you before about that, but, so that must be a good thing to be able to share what you've learned from people like Neil, and you mentioned Richard Bednall, who, like, Richard, if you're listening, super coach. And now, of course, you're passing on to other young athletes. Like, how's that role working out for you?
It was different to start with. It was it's totally different trying to get someone to do something that I myself just would do. And you learn that you might have 6 or 7 athletes, but they're all different. Some you can yell and scream at when you need to and they understand why you're doing it. Others, if you do that, they'll, you know, shut down on you. So you've got to learn that everybody's different. And when it's all said and done and time to race, I don't have a lot of control over the outcome of what happens in the race. And that's probably the hardest thing to accept was that once you step out on that track, you're on your own. There's nothing I can do.
When you watch middle distance running in the Paralympics, which were your distances, do you sort of get into it and think, oh, I could have been in that guy?
Not anymore. I'm happily retired. I do miss the friendships and the connections you make outside of training. I don't miss the training. I don't really miss the travel at the moment either. But, yeah, I miss that connection that you have with people. But, yeah, I don't miss the running.
Oh, sorry, Rob. I have this reoccurring dream, and I haven't had it for a while, but I had it just before the Olympics. I wonder if you share it. No, I have this dream that I'm actually out in the arena getting ready to compete in the hammer, and then I have this this realization in the middle of my dream. I don't do this anymore. Why am I here? Do you have a similar? Do you have a reoccurring dream like that? Not the hammer throw, of course.
No, but I don't. But I do sometimes. I'll watch a race and it'll you know, trigger some memories and stuff. Some good, some not so good with races. But yeah, I haven't had that dream yet. But
well, maybe now I'll put it in your mind. You might have it. It's like Inception.
And what about talking about footage and things like that? Have you got footage of yourself competing at the Paralympics?
I do actually. My dad, it was back on VHS tape. Cost a lot of money too. Thanks, ABC. But and there is some races now on YouTube, but yeah, I do have some footage and to go back and look
at races. One of your Sydney races is on YouTube.
Yeah, I couldn't put the actual semi-final on that I actually won. That'd be nice.
It's probably there somewhere.
It's not. I've looked. Oh.
Well, you're a lucky man. I can't find any of my sports on any YouTube clips.
Which is a blessing for all of us.
So what does it sort of mean to you to be able to look on Google and YouTube and things like that and sort of to relive sort of some of the highlights of your life, so to speak, with Paralympics and races like that?
I mean, probably now when you look back at it, now that I'm retired, it probably carries a little bit more sentiment. But, yeah, sometimes it's great to just look back and just remember that, you know, I used to be able to do that and I used to be able to do it very well. And when I tell some people, they go and look at it and they're quite surprised. You know, I often get the remark that you don't look like a Paralympian. I often wonder what I'm supposed to look like.
What should a Paralympian look like?
And what about the medals? I mean, are the medals the same as what the Olympics get?
To be honest, I'm not sure because I don't have one.
Oh, I don't, me neither.
I think they might be. They're just inscribed a little bit different. But, yeah, that's the one medal missing from my collection.
Yeah, but you've got so many other sort of awards over the years, yeah, so many major world events.
I'd trade them for one of those.
Yeah, yeah. It's and even, I mean, we've got a double gold medal at Commonwealth Games here, sure.
Yeah, I would trade that too.
I think
there's going to be, obviously, now we talked about like watching now, Channel 7 are going to be showing it, and again, they've got lots of their different channels where you can watch a range of sports, but people who maybe are new to watching Paralympics, there's going to be lots of different classes of athletes. So can you give us sort of how that will look, what should people be looking out for and their understanding of the different classes competing?
I mean, a couple of them are pretty self-explanatory. I mean, like you have your below-knee amputees and your above-knee amputees, so and your arm amputees, they're pretty self-explanatory. A lot of wheelchair classes kind of speak for themselves. The cerebral palsy classes get a bit tricky, because there's about six different classes, and some of them are for athletes in wheelchairs, and then some of them are for athletes that are ambulant and can run and walk and stuff like that. So so when I was competing, I was what was called a T36, so the T is for track, the 30 represents cerebral palsy, and the 6 was the degree of my disability. So I was kind of just above, I think I was like one or two classes out of a wheelchair. And then that cerebral palsy goes up to, say, a 38, and if you're a 38, it's very mild and hardly noticeable. So people will notice in cerebral palsy that you can have the same disability classification, but there can still be quite a range of difference in disability regards to the people. So
for argument's sake, in the Olympics, the 100-metre sprint, you have the men's and the women's. As a comparison, how many different events are there for the 100 metres?
Well, Paralympics, there's men's and women's, and then every disability classification in track and field has their own 100 metres. So there would be probably upwards of 20-plus 100-metre races.
Well, so for people that like the 100-metre race, there's a feast.
Plenty to choose from.
Bruce McAvaney will love it.
He would. They should pay him to commentate.
Well, who does commentate? Is there sort of any well-known athletes or Paralympics?
I don't know. It seems to change year to year. So, like I said, I haven't noticed a lot of publicity about it and who's going to be doing what in that regard. I mean, I know a bit about it because I have friends that are in the team that are on social media, so I see a little bit.
Fernley the other day on the show on Channel 7, the morning show, and I think he's going to be involved in obviously hosting or commentating.
No, that'd be great.
I mean, he's really put a face to Paralympics. He's with his tennis. He's on ads, zoom in the car, and he's been on sort of several special shows. He has really put a face to Paralympics, and sort of he's helped everyone in that regard to sort of
People like that are great. I mean, anybody that can help boost the profile of the Paralympics is great for us and great for the sport.
Well, let's hope for a great sort of event again, and perhaps we can get you on again, Malcolm, after the Paralympics finishes.
I look forward to it.
We'll do a review.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Australia, actually, just to finish with, the biggest team they've ever sent.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing too.
So ends another Carlin Laid Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.